That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
As we see some movement at the takeoff zone, it's Kelly Slater grabbing rail. A clean entry, this thing holding open, it spits.
When it spit me, I thought it was going to spit me off my board.
Comes out with the spit, spits him out.
Comes out after the spit.
Gets spat out of another good looking wave here. Spit, spit, spit.
We're just spitballing, right? Yeah, I got it.
Well, I never know.
Yeah, guy, David Lee Scales, Scott Bass with you. It is spit. We're spitballing. Shit's forming in my cheeks right now. I'm getting it together. I'm going to lay a luggy out on the black asphalt.
Disgusting.
Thank you.
Thank you for that lovely musical intro, though.
That is my new favorite. Doc Watson, yeah. Summertime.
It was very soothing. Yeah, what a wonderful way to start the show.
Yeah. So I'm on episode 2 of the Ken Burns country music documentary on PBS. It's pretty cool.
I haven't started it yet.
Did it's just you, like you said, it's like, okay, here we go. We're going into Ken Burns assignment. World.
Did you listen to him on Recode?
No.
I think she did an episode
with him. I'm sure she did. He probably did the rounds. I'll have to check it out.
She puts out a lot of content, so I can't really keep up. You know, I've gotten to the point where I'm just cherry picking it now.
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of it. I'm a big fan for sure. I like it because she doesn't. Because look, she's Kara Swisher's a. I don't think she would argue that she's a progressive liberal, but she gets such great guests on, and she keeps it pretty fair.
You think so?
I mean, for as fair as she can.
Yeah.
That guy you were just listening to is a former Trump executive.
Oh, is that? That wasn't Recode, though, was it?
Yeah, that was Recode.
Oh, I didn't recognize her voice.
Yeah. Oh that's because I do it at a 1.5. I listen to all my podcasts at 1.5 speed.
Do you really?
Yeah. You don't do that?
I feel like she's already at 1.5.
Just by the way, natural state. All of our listeners should listen to these podcasts at 1.5 speed. They're way faster and they're better. I think they're better. I mean, you can just take in way more content quicker.
Okay. But, yeah, I don't know if my brain processes fast enough to absorb it all.
Yeah.
I'll try.
Yeah.
That's funny, though, that I didn't even recognize her voice because of that.
Yeah.
So one thing that we should follow up on if we're going to be talking about music right now and documentary.
Yeah.
Did you watch Echo in the Canyon yet?
No.
It's available on Netflix now.
Okay, good.
They just made it available for streaming.
Okay, killer.
It's not good.
It's not good.
Dude, I had such high hopes. All of the advertising looks amazing. And the guests that they got or the people that they feature and interview it in it are A-listers, you know?
Hmm. That's so bad. For listeners, I was told it was good. Somebody saw it.
Dude, it just wasn't. Like, it's basically Jacob Dylan. It's the Jacob Dylan show. And, like, right. Jacob Dylan... I almost hate to spoil it and give you an impression of it before you form your own.
But, I mean, I'm not going to watch it if you tell me not to watch it, though.
You got to give it a chance.
Yeah.
And then you can form your own opinion. But
maybe give me your opinion on it. I want to hear yours.
Jacob Dylan is so unaffected. Like, he is the ultimate cool guy. He stands there just looking condescendingly at whoever's talking. And it'll be like David Crosby and Stephen Stills and, like, all these A-listers. And they'll tell, like, a really funny, good story, and he won't even crack a smile. He'll just be like, He'll just nod politely. And he's looking down his nose at him, wearing, like, a cool leather jacket. And
that's lame.
He's so lame.
Is it so? Is it insincere? Is it just like,
dude? It's shocking how cool the guy thinks he is. And the other thing is, if you're producing a documentary,
you want to be giving to your subjects.
And you also don't need to be on camera. Exactly. Like, they could just have the talking heads referring to a producer off screen. But the fact that Dylan's even in all of the shots standing side by side.
Yeah, that tells you a lot.
With cutaways to him being unaffected by their amazing story that they're telling. Yeah. It really drags the whole thing down. And then part of the documentary is him covering music from this era of Laurel Canyon with modern musicians. Like, he'll get Cat Power, Regina Spektor, these famous modern singers to do duets with and stuff. So they'll be talking about a particular song and then cut to him on stage singing that song, like their own version of it. But it's like, I don't know, you're doing basically a mediocre version of this epic song that we all know and love. It really just feels like Jacob Dylan kind of masturbating in front of all of us.
Wow, that's pretty telling.
Yeah.
I like your, that's a great way to put it, you know?
That's what it felt like to me. But like, you, I know.
This would be the greatest, if your review could run in like Variety magazine. I think there's so much truth. Look, you're just being honest. That's just the way you felt about it.
It was masturbatory.
I trust your opinions, you know? And so, could you imagine if the headline of Variety magazine? Oh, my God.
Jacob Dylan Jack Session.
Jacob Dylan's Masturbation Canyon.
Dude, the thing is, I love Bob Dylan.
I know.
And I wanted to love this badly.
If you love Bob Dylan, you're going to love Doc Watson, because that's who Bob Dylan loved. Doc Watson.
So did you find Doc Watson based on the documentary?
No. I found Doc Watson before. I was at this, I think I told you, I was invited to play music with these people. In fact, one of the ladies was like, you got to watch Echoes in the Canyon. And one of the guys is a super cool guy. His name's Todd, and he's a filmmaker from Santa Cruz, and he's on the board of directors with Surf Aid, and he's a guitar player. And we were jamming. We were having a little noodle, and he's like, dude, you should listen to Doc Watson. And I'm like, who's he? I didn't even know. I'm such a kook. I'm like, and he's like, you don't know who Doc Watson is? And I'm like, no. He's like, well, he's the guy that all of the radical folk guys looked up to, you know, back in the 60s or whatever. So anyway, that's who turned me on to Doc Watson, was my friend Todd Hansen from Santa Cruz.
Okay. Yeah. Somehow I'm unaware of Doc Watson.
I think
too.
That's his last name, Hansen. Yeah.
I mean, when I think of the guys that informed that folk movement, I think Woody Guthrie, of course, is someone that Dylan always references.
I'm just getting into Woody Guthrie. He just starts in episode 2. Start to talk about him.
Okay. I do definitely need to watch that. How do you feel about Robert Johnson selling his soul to the devil down at the crossroads and that whole lore?
Well, that's more of kind of a blues story, but I mean, do I think it's real?
Yeah.
Do I think the devil appeared and said, I'll give you a record contract if you... I don't believe that.
No?
No, I don't believe that the devil physically manifested himself, and I think it's a great analogy.
Where did Robert Johnson go for that weekend, and how did he come back such a profound talent?
You know what? I don't know. These are great questions. I don't seriously know too much. I thought it was always just a metaphor. I didn't know that this actually occurred.
Yeah. He was Robert Johnson. Why are you laughing at me?
I'm just blown away.
I was there.
I'm learning new shit all the time. Who knew?
I was there.
I thought it was just like, you know, like, don't sell out.
No, dude. Robert Johnson was like...
So wait, he wanted, went to a crossroads.
Wanted
with his
to be prior to that, he wanted to be a musician, and he always had a guitar, and he'd try to play it, and everybody knew like that's what his desire was. He just wasn't very good, you know. He'd always practice, but just everybody knew he wasn't very good. He disappears for a weekend, comes back, and he's this profound talent, just like the best guitar blues player ever, and everybody goes, what the heck happened? Like, how'd you learn so quickly? You were terrible on Friday. You're amazing on Monday. And he goes, well, I went down to the crossroads. I was down at the, like, hitchhiking or something. And the devil appeared and approached and made a deal with me. I sold my soul to the devil for the gift of
what did the devil
guitar.
Get?
Just his soul at the age of 27. Mm-hmm. So that is why. And it turns out that now the lore. This
is all these people die at age 27?
Like, so the lore is that all these kind of iconic, not just musicians, but iconic musicians have still been paying Robert Johnson's debt to the devil at the age of 27.
And so we're talking like Kurt Cobain, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin,
Amy Winehouse,
Jim Morrison.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a giant list.
Sounds like the craziest conspiracy theory ever.
Or it's so crazy it's true.
Here's what I do know. That occasionally guitar players can have major breakthroughs. And their level of guitar ability can just get way better with one of these breakthroughs. Mm-hmm. And it could just be that he had a breakthrough. Like, he met some guy that's like, dude, just do this. Like, here's how you're going to do the turnaround on these songs. You know, here's your bridge. Do this for the bridge. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, I can connect them. Mm-hmm. Connect the chords. Who knew? Who knew? 1-4-5. Wow, thank you very much. And, you know, he had a cup of coffee with the guy. And he's like, and then all of a sudden he sounds way better because... I mean, how much better could he have... Like, he's not that great. He's not Jimi Hendrix. He's just connecting 1-4-5 chords with a turnaround.
Fair enough. Then why is everybody dying at 27?
Because they're not. There's just... When you look at the swath of guitar players or swath of musicians or luminary types, there are many great ones that didn't die at 27. Like, how do you explain them? How do you explain Eric Clapton didn't die at 27? How do you explain all these people that didn't die at 27? So what I'm saying is the ones that did die at 27, random conspiracy. When you take drugs, you die.
No, because Clapton did a ton of drugs.
Yeah, that's my point.
He didn't die.
Right, exactly. Thank you. You made my point.
Well, it's a different point.
Keith Richards.
Yeah.
My point is that if you get 1,000 people, yeah, 5 of them are going to die at the age of 27. 10 of them are going to die at the age of 28.
Right. But if the devil collected everybody's soul, then it would be problematic. And then I think like there'd be a real battle.
How does the devil collect a soul? Like, how does this
ask Robert Johnson?
How does this literally? How old was Robert Johnson when he died?
27. That's the point. That's where this all started.
Gotcha.
So let me ask you this: why is it though you believe in God?
Yes.
And you're Christian.
Yes.
Then why? Then it would stand to reason that the devil does exist, and the devil could broker such deals.
Well, I believe that God is love, and I believe that, first of all, I don't know. Like, that's the beauty of, I don't know. Mm. I'm not the expert. All but I know is I have faith in a higher power. I choose to call it God, and it's my personal thing, and it's really nobody's business, and I'm not here to sell it or to tell it.
But it would stand to reason with that belief system that the
devil
could exist.
No, you don't know my belief system. That's just it. You think that I have this, like, Judeo-Christian, like... Bible, literal reading of the Bible thing, which I keep it really simple. Love people.
But, okay.
And everything happens in God's world by...
If there's a love system, isn't there a counterpoint to that would be an evil system? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Hate.
So he could be brokering deals.
Who?
Whoever that is.
Hate?
Yeah.
Hate?
The hate
personified?
System.
You mean President Trump?
Oh, no. Dude, we covered religion and politics already in the first 10 minutes.
Do you know how many emails I'm going to get? People are going to hate on me so hard. That's okay.
That's my point. I get you to tell your beliefs, and I never share mine so that you get the emails.
You cash the checks, and I don't.
Speaking of which,
yes.
How'd your lunch with Rainbow go?
It was great. I really enjoyed it. So people...
They've heard Rainbow.
So Chris is... Rainbow is a guy from New Zealand who listens to a lot of podcasts and listens to ours as part of his routine. And he was in town. He was in...
He's from New Zealand.
From New Zealand. Flew here with his girlfriend. And a super smart guy. I had a great cup of coffee with him and his girl. And it was super fun. I enjoyed it immensely.
Rainbow's been listening since day one. He's been listening to your show since before you and I linked up.
Yeah.
And... has been sending us feedback all the time, and his feedback is incoherent at times. And so you and I make jokes, and we've even read them on air just because there's, and some of them, the ones that are coherent are profound and like really he makes really good points as well.
He's very intelligent.
I know, but I was apprehensive. After all these emails for all these years, I'm like, all right, man, this guy could be full on crazy. I'm not sure what to expect. He was the nicest dude ever. I was so glad that we spent time together. And he gave me a bunch of gifts. By the way, I have a bottle of wine for your wife that I was supposed to bring you.
Oh,
because
nice of him.
Yeah, he gave me a bunch of bottles of wine and some other stuff. And a t-shirt. I forgot your t-shirt,
I should have brought him
Dang
something. Damn.
Anyways,
He's cool, man. I enjoyed it. He's a great guy. You know, he was on, he probably told you maybe, I don't know, but he was sort of a luminary with the international New Zealand surfing team back in, I think, the 90s. He was like a judge, traveling, you know, coach, mentor type.
Really?
For the Australia, for the New Zealand, the Kiwi national surf team.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they went to Japan for the ISAs. And
you guys covered a lot of ground.
He's very, he's a very smart guy.
Totally smart. And
so glad we got to meet him.
Great knowledge of surf history, too.
Yeah.
Because I met him here at Shack, and we walked around the museum, and yeah, the guy knows a lot about
surfing.
He
has a great memory. He's remembering shit that I said. I'm like, I don't remember saying that.
I do that all the time.
Oh, Lordy. What are you going to do?
Well, what do we got to catch up on?
A lot.
I've got emails and stuff.
I did, too. Let me look at my Instagram, because there's one that I want to read relating to our last episode. So here, I'm pulling it up now, and here it is. It's from Marcos. Oh, gosh, we get no internet connection here? What the hell? He brought up some great points here. He says, hey, big fan of Spit Podcast and all of your other podcasts. Really happy of you to talk about our lovely country in Portugal. This is from Marcos, and he doesn't write or speak English perfectly, so bear with me. I'm reading directly what he says.
Okay.
I just have to make a few corrections to you guys. When you talk about the walk, it's not the way to São Domingos. It's the way to Santiago to Compostela. It's not in Portugal. It's in Spain, in Galiza. Really close to Pantene here. They have the WSL here. Jake Marshall is doing it this year. I don't know what that means. It's a place here, it's a place where there are the remains of the Apostle St. Tiago, which I'm guessing, I don't know. So that talk that you and I had about the way, it's the it's this walk from Santiago to Compostela in Spain. And it's the walk that brought Christianity to the area. And there are apparently lots of places you can begin this walk, from the south of Spain to the Basque Country and from Portugal. There's different ways to eventually end up at the final destination, which is, I think, this place where the apostle is laid to rest. Then he goes on to say that Portugal is the second oldest country in the world after Luxembourg.
I didn't know that.
With the boundaries as we know them from 1297. Magic Quiver, the original, was not made from Marius. Was Magic Quiver the name of the lightning bolt store? I'm wondering.
No.
I'm trying to figure it out.
No, I was telling you that Magic Quiver is owned by this guy, Mario, who he's talking about, that I linked up with.
Oh, that's
who has,
right,
like, the restaurant, the surf hostel, or the hotel.
Okay, so the original Magic Quiver was not made by Mario. The concept was made from two Portuguese friends when they had a trip to Byron Bay. And they had difficulty to sell the concept because they were ahead of the time. The store went almost bankrupt. And they sold the store to Mario. Is it Mario or Marios?
Mario.
Mario. And with money, it was much easier for it to take off. Please, next time you guys come to visit Portugal, it would be my pleasure to show you our country and the spots and take you to the magic spots. Keep up the great job you're doing in Surf We Trust. Thanks, Marcos.
Very cool.
And then he sent great pictures of recent surf and stuff. And so, yeah, I just said thanks. Thank you very much, Marcos. We're very psyched.
Good info. I've got one for you that I'd love to get your critical analysis on, Scott.
Yes.
Adam said, quote, I'm looking forward to the day when the surfing world wakes up and realizes a spinning Italo landing in the flats is not radical surfing. It's just stupid stunts. In the heat against Jack Freestone, Italo was awarded handsomely for his spinning top impressions. Whereas Jack, who performed an alley-oop in the most critical part of the wave and landed into the transition, was underscored. There is an equivalent in skateboarding. YouTube is full of clips showing riders dropping into bowls and performing flips and spins as they fly out and then land on the flat deck. It's not that hard to do.
Wow, that's really good insight, you know. And, and I tell you, I think that we're all constantly sort of trying to play catch up to what's happening. And when I say we all, I mean the judges and you and I, the consumers of this content. And there's some people that are really hip to it, like this guy, and probably guys that are closer to it, like Cote.
Closer to skating.
Yeah, closer to what it's all about, you know. Like it's... You know, it's, he brings up a great point, you know.
Does
landing in the flats just lame relative to landing in the transition?
Well,
Or are they just apples and oranges?
I think they're apples and oranges. Like, I kind of wanted to agree with what he was saying.
Yeah.
Except if Italo did that spin and landed at the back of the wave, that would be the equivalent to landing on the deck for the skateboarder.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, you land on the back of the wave. That's weight. I could do that, you know?
So he's landing in the bottom of the bowl, which is really difficult. Like, you break your legs when you do that.
Yeah.
I do think that landing in the transition's the ideal thing. Like, I think that's the most smoothest. It's the most style. I don't care. I think it's smooth and stylish. And I think you want to be in the wave face. I don't think you want to be down at the bottom of the wave because you lose speed down there. If you land flat in the flats, you're all your speed's gone. If you land in the transition, you've got some vertical momentum to get speed and to do a bottom turn.
Often when Italo's landing in the flats, it's the closeout section, so there's no more wave to be ridden anyways.
Which brings up another point. You know, and again, I speak from ignorance. I'm not really an expert here, but you know, if there's no more wave to be ridden anyway, maybe it shouldn't be scored as highly. Like, I want to see that move where you land in the transition and then do three huge hacks and get tubed on the inside and come out and maybe do an alley-oop or whatever. You know, like if it's the end, if that's all your wave is like pump down the line and do whatever he did. I saw it. I don't even know what they're called. Do that move and land in the flats and that's the wave. Maybe it's a 3.7, not a 6.7. And I think it's difficult for the judges. I do think it's a hard place for the WSL and for everyone, all of us. Everyone's trying to wrap their heads around what is this new thing, you know, and how much of it do we just glom on and go, that's the most incredible thing ever, and how much of it do we go, yeah, that's great, but there's more to riding a wave than just that.
I like the direction that Adam's going. I want to dig in and kind of analyze it as we move forward, but I don't think surfing is unique in that you can't just say landing in the transition's harder, full stop, landing in the flats is easier, full stop, because every individual wave you need to be able to assess critically. They're all unique. And so the 10 that Italo got in the final against Jordy, it was a closeout. And there was only an opportunity to do one turn. And he did the raddest possible maneuver that we've seen. Anybody at this point in surfing's evolution, that was the pinnacle of what you could do on that section. And so, yeah, he landed in the flats. And yes, it was only one turn. But it is the pinnacle of our sport at this moment, you know?
Well, it is that because it's so difficult. Like, the question is, could Jordy do that? And the answer is no.
Correct.
And not very many people can. There might be, like, four people. Like, I don't know. Italo, Gabe, Felipe, and maybe Kelly or...
No. Jordy is in the conversation of people who could do it, I would argue.
Yeah, but... And then there's like, who can actually do it with the jersey on when it matters? Like, Italo was doing it, like it was a bottom turn, like it was no big deal.
I mean, honestly, we haven't talked about Portugal yet, and maybe we weren't going to do it today because it's kind of not news anymore. So I'll just touch on it. That is the difference between Italo and everybody else in that moment, is that he has a world title on the line, and it's the penultimate event of the season, and he's in the final, and he knows how to stomp a 10 with all those things on the line. Jordy gets up on a wave and surfs it to a 6 as if a title isn't on the line. And that is the difference between who's going to be world champ and who isn't. Jordy, if you're not going to crescendo at the penultimate event in the final, what are you doing?
What does penultimate mean?
The second to the final.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good word.
The final and then the second to the final.
So you're like the penultimate to me.
The penultimate podcaster.
No.
We'll let the fans weigh in on that.
That's a good point. You know, like Jordy, it's between his ears, and Italo seems to be such a free spirit with a jersey on. It just does not matter to him.
But I was so confused. Jordy, he got the first wave, and it was like a Midland-sized wave. It wasn't like a set wave. He did a floater, a carve, and an end-section floater. And I'm thinking, why would you even go on that wave? This is a world title on the line. You're in a final in Portugal. You know you're not going to beat Italo with a 6 or with any 6 in your scoreline. Why would you go? And if you do go, do a flip. If you go on that wave, you have to do something insane. And sure enough, he posts a 6. Italo was on the very next set wave out the back and posts a 10. Jordy... That was actually the highest score that Jordy got through the heat. He basically laid down after that. It was like, oh, well, Italo got the 10.
That's something that I was just thinking about when you were bringing it up, when you were talking about this. That when you're in a heat with Italo or Felipe, for that matter, and probably Gabe, and you're Jack Freestone or Chloe Andino or Jordy Smith, you cannot surf from behind. In other words, you have to be the first one to lay down the law. You have to be the first one to catch the wave and do the most insane aerial thing. You need to let them know that you mean business.
Yeah.
Seems to me that if they go out there, do a spin, get a 10, and you're sitting on a 4, you're just like, oh. And now there's all this pressure on you to actually do it. You're a little bit more free-spirited and sprightly when you're the first one to attempt it and go for it, because you're kind of like, whatever, let's just go.
Yeah.
And now, you know, so my point is, those guys have to be the first one to stake claim to, hey, I'm here to do aerials and screw you, watch me fly.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the only way. I think as soon as one of those other guys nails some crazy turn, some aerial, it's like dagger in the coffin. Or, no, dagger in the coffin? Nail in the coffin.
There you go.
Thank you. Dagger in the heart?
But why even go on the 6-point wave?
I agree. Like, no, I'm just saying, you got to go into the heat with the mindset that I'm going to do an aerial before he does an aerial.
Jordy either completely had like a brain lapse, like forgot that he was in a final, or just had no strategy going into the final.
I can't speak to his mental state. It's always been, I think, problematic.
I mean, it was bizarre.
Yeah. Does he have a coach? Of course he
does. Yeah, well, Chris Gallagher was. Stone, I should say, was. But now he's doing the Olympic thing, so... Hmm. I've got more emails.
Oh, yeah, I've got one too. Best Coast sent us something to say, hey, I just want to let you know that Medina losing in that heat to
Kyle
didn't send the world title to Pipeline. In fact, it was Felipe Toledo losing,
correct,
which sent the world title chase to Pipeline.
Yeah, so that's true.
I think I might have misspoken.
I definitely misspoke, but I knew that was true. I just worded it incorrectly over the... So Renee sent an email saying, "Dear David, the analogy that I look at when assessing where wave pools will take us is from rock climbing, another sport that I love. Despite the proliferation of artificial climbing walls in indoor gyms and the whole circuit or competition circuit devoted to them, nobody really believes that they can come even close to providing the experience of climbing outdoors on real rock. There are sensations, feelings, sights, and adventures that one experience provides that the other simply doesn't. While numerically, it's likely that at this point, there are more climbers inside than outside, the center of gravity of the world's, of the sport's culture, the focus of the highest ambitions, and certainly the photography, film, and writing that surrounds it remain wedded to massive cliffs of granite and limestone, not color-coded plastic." End quote.
I think that's true, and I don't think that's anything that you and I don't already know and agree with. But
we're always trying to draw comparisons, and I think that's the best comparison to the wave
pool. It's a good one, except that most wave pools, in fact, everyone that I know of, is outside, whereas rock climbing gyms are inside, so you do get a sort of generic kind of air-conditioned vibe, which is kind of weird. Whereas at least, like at Waco or whatever, these new installations that are coming in, you could actually kind of make some backdrops that make it a little bit not quite as engineering, like an engineering vibe, you know. Yeah, like you can do. So I think because wave pools are outside, it does. You know, the wind's blowing, the birds are there. There's a little bit more nature than
there is.
But it
more,
is a good comparison.
There's more nature, but it's the most apt comparison I've seen yet.
It's a good one. It is a good one for sure. Yeah. And we all know that the epitome, you know, that like it's always going to come down to just as LCAP is the climbing culture's, you know, sort of alpha. Certainly Pipe or Chopo or these spots are going to be, Jaws, these are going to be the spots that will always capture our imagination because they're fascinating.
Yeah.
I ran into Dave Proden.
Did you really?
I ran into Dave Proden.
Where?
Cardiff Reef.
No
totally
way.
Totally random, yeah. It was cool. He was just happened to be down there. He was taking his young son out surfing. But, I asked him about that Brazilian storm documentary that I was telling you about that I thought was going to raise a lot of hell, you know?
Yeah.
And he said that they're not sure when that's going to come out. And the problem is that this was one of those partnering deals the WSL had with a guy in Brazil, a producer in Brazil. And the producer in Brazil is really the guy that's pulling the distribution strings and when this thing will be shown. And so they can't necessarily say when it's going to come out. And so my gut feeling is it's probably not going to come out before Hawaii, which is unfortunate because it would make for a really good sort of foundational kind of fun place to start before we dive into the Hawaiian season.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Are you familiar? I don't think we talked about it. Kelly Slater's HBO documentary that's coming out next month.
No, I'm not familiar. I think, is it a WSL thing?
No, HBO thing.
An HBO documentary?
It's called 24/7. I think it's a series that they do, but they're doing. They've been filming one with Kelly, and they're supposed to release it in early December.
I can kind of tell you what that's going to be like already.
I thought that I could until that Soundwaves episode with Kelly.
And was that part of it?
No, but the Soundwaves episode made me much more interested to see what's going on in Kelly's mind. Like, the interesting thing about it isn't Kelly versus Pipeline or Kelly versus the Brazilian Storm. It's Kelly versus Kelly. Like, Kelly's in his own head, and he's insecure about whether or not he can still, you know, compete with all of these people where, well, to you and I, it's like, dude, you've already won 11 world titles. You have nothing to prove anymore. You're welcome to take your bow at this point and move on. But the fact that he still has these demons he's trying to prove himself is really fascinating.
Exactly. No, that's where you nailed it. It's this, when you say, oh, look, you've got 11 world titles, you have nothing left to prove anymore. Then the question is, well, then what have I got left to prove?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where I don't want to say he's having a midlife crisis, but you know, we look at some of these guys that are 33 that drop off the tour and like, God, what are they doing with their lives? You know, and it's a struggle. It's a sincere problem for guys that are sort of untrained for the workforce to figure out what to do when you're 33. And I think in some regard, even though Kelly doesn't have those struggles, he has that same sort of anxiety of like, what is chapter two for me? You know, and
chapter,
I guess,
14, well, whatever, for him,
next chapter, what is the next chapter? And obviously everyone goes, oh, well, it's business, you know, Kelly, you've got so many business opportunities, and he does, but I don't think he wants that. I think he wants, all he knows is winning.
Well, that is the crux. And that's, we all have recognized, maybe me more than you, have recognized he's already aged out. Like, dude, you haven't been winning for 5 years now. So you're not going to win at your own wave pool that you designed.
I don't, you know, here's what's interesting, right? You know what he won in 2016?
Chopu.
3 years ago, right?
Chopu? Is that it?
I don't even know if he won Chopu. He won Wave of the Winter. He won Surfline's Wave of the Winter.
Mm.
It might have been 2018, or was it 2016? Anyway. It was a couple years ago.
I remember that wave. That was an insane wave.
It was an insane wave. And it was an insane winter for Wave of the Winter entries.
Right.
There was just, it was incredible. And he won Wave of the Winter.
Yeah.
Like, so he can still win, because what's fascinating is that our culture and our content and the way we look at competitions is going more and more towards this, let's take a big global look at things and then pick which was really the best one.
Yeah.
Rather than this 4-hour time frame.
Yeah.
So I think he needs to look at that and go, you know what? I'm still winning. And I'm saying to you that he still is winning, but maybe not in that construct of that, you know, 4-day surf contest.
Or world title over the course of a season. That's what I'm talking about. So okay. I agree with you. He's unbelievably talented and the best surfer in the world when the waves are big and barreling at a reef break. But he's not going to win a world title again. There's no question in my mind about that. And the fact that he thinks that he does. And he's also not even going to win at Surf Ranch. He's not going to win at Snapper. He's not going to win at France, Portugal, most stops on tour. So the fact that he still thinks that he is, and he's conflicted about why he can't get more than 2/8 at Surf Ranch, like, it was a foregone conclusion that Gabriel's going to win that event. For him to be sitting
that's a bad analogy.
It's not. I mean, no, it's exactly what Soundwaves was about. Wave. That's let's what that episode was about.
But let's use a real wave. I mean, that's an outlier.
No, this is the precise conversation. Is he's sitting on the exercise bike at Surf Ranch looking out at the wave going, am I good enough? And his girlfriend is saying, Kelly, yes, you're good enough. You built this wave. Like, you are good enough. Go out there and, like, have confidence. And that's what he's struggling with. That's the crux of why this is so interesting to me, is that in his head, he's still struggling with this thing that is very obvious to everybody on the outside. But if you want to have a conversation about where he's the best surfer in the world, I agree with you. Like, that, I'll have that conversation too. And if Pipe's pumping, he can win that event. If Chopu's pumping, he can win that event. But that's not what makes the documentary interesting, and that's not what HBO should be focusing on.
Yeah, we don't know, right? We don't know what the documentary is going to be about, do we?
Hopefully it's about... No, but that's what I'm saying. Hopefully it's about Kelly's conflict with Kelly.
I have confidence in HBO and their production team.
I do, too.
They'll put out something good. I hope it's not what I think it is, which is overly controlled, you know... Kelly Slater, isn't he great? Like, I hope it's more about the demons than it is about, hey, everyone, Kelly's here. Let's talk about Outer Known. You know,
there's
chance this guy's the greatest. Like, we already know he's the greatest. You know what? And we already know he built a wave. And we already know he's blah, blah. You know, like, what we want to know is what's really what you and I are talking about right now.
There's
what's really going on.
There's no chance that the HBO would do, like, a flowery...
I agree.
Yeah. And here's, by the way... Even though, I mean, we've spent more time on the podcast discussing Kelly Slater than any other surfer, I'm sure.
It's because he's the best.
He's the most interesting. This is, interesting. I love, the only people that are even worth talking about, really, at length, Kelly, Gabriel, and to a certain degree, John. But, like, Gabriel, because of these things, it has nothing to do with their surfing.
Yeah.
It has to do with the fact that Gabriel actually has some passion, and he's fighting for something. There's this internal battle that he's having that he has to prove to something. Like, that then gives us hours of content to analyze.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it made me start to think, okay, who are the most fascinating surfers? And in my mind, those are the top surfers in the world. And it's not the top five necessarily.
No.
You know, like, I think of... And the reason I rolled my eyes when you said John is because he's kind of been off the radar, at least off of my radar. Maybe he's out there. I don't know. But the most interesting surfers in the world right now are you know, Gabe's definitely there, right? I think Idolo's there. Idolo's a very interesting guy.
Not so much. I don't know anything about him. He seems happy.
The most interesting surfers in the world, probably Albie Layer's probably right there, maybe.
They're not on tour.
I know.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying who's the most, like, because to my mind, those are the ones that...
I agree.
Are the most relevant.
So this
most
is...
Most relevant is what I'm talking about.
That, I agree with you completely. And so this has been a conversation that's come up in a number of conversations that I've had recently, which is surfing used to be a lot more interesting. When you look back at the era where people weren't making millions of dollars doing it, they worked real jobs and had real struggles in life and didn't spend all year, you know, traveling to the best waves on the planet and then just surfing those waves once they arrived in that location. They actually struggled, spent probably most of their time struggling to get to the location, then got skunked a bunch of the time because they didn't have modern forecasting. And so characters, whether it's Dora or Wayne Lynch or Nat Young, like, those people developed very interesting character.
Are you interviewing Nat Young, by the way?
I already did.
Oh, was it good?
It was good, yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty smart.
Yeah. I mean, and he's into politics, and he's written a bunch.
He's very
you know, he
well
reads
spoken.
A ton. Yeah. Like, he was a model for Vogue. Like, so
yeah.
That,
let's go back
these are compelling characters because they had all of this other inputs into their life. Whereas the modern WCT surfer makes a lot of money. They have all of these handlers around them solving all of the problems, whether
they're
it's
boring.
Rental cars. And then their only focus is to show up and spend a bunch of time in the water. They're boring.
And then when they do put out this, hey, this is who I am thing, it's just so fake and vanilla and kind of lame.
Like, it really...
Who's the most boring? Like, let's get a list of, like, vanilla guys that you're just like, really? I don't even care.
I hate to even say
it. What does that mean? Are we being too
mean? It's a little bit mean, and it's not their fault.
Yeah.
Like,
okay, let's not go there.
It's kind of a reflection.
Let's talk about the ones that are... Who's the most interesting?
I'm going to do the most uninteresting real quick, because I referenced this recently. What qualifies as personality on the CT now is if you wear a hat. Like, if you wear, like, a full-brim hat that doesn't have your sponsor logo on it, Joe Turpel will reference that for the next six events and be like, he has such cool style. You know, like, that qualifies as style. Or Connor Coffin playing a couple licks on his guitar on Instagram, that becomes, he has so much personality, you know? And I'm not even shaming Connor Coffin. Like, good on you. Like, do what you want to do. But that isn't personality. You know what I mean?
I know.
Personality is Gabe frothing and flipping off the jet. Like, he's wearing his emotions on his sleeve. Connor Coffin, it shows that he has an interest, but that's not showcasing his, you know, his passion, you know?
Yeah. I think you nailed it. That's an interest. He has a hobby, but we don't know any, we haven't learned anything about his value system, his beliefs, his parental upbringing. We haven't seen and that's why Gabe might be the most interesting surfer in the world.
Kelly's more interesting. It's
Kelly and Gabe. And who else is super interesting? I don't even know if Kai's interesting. Kai Lenny's just incredible. But I don't necessarily think they put out a lot about. He's a little bit overhandled, probably. As far as
management.
Yeah.
I get some interest out of Jeremy Flores.
I love Jeremy Flores. He should be. They should put out more stuff on him. When I say they, I mean he should put himself out there because he's great.
Jeremy's more interesting than he is a good surfer in my mind.
Yes.
I mean, he's a phenomenal surfer. He's been surfing the exact same way for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
But I'm always interested to see what he's going to say, you know? Or just how he's going to get upset in a heat because he will showcase some of that passion.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of guys that are just, that you just kind of go, like, it's funny because I was going to say, well, Barton Lynch is pretty interesting.
He was at a time.
He still is.
He's happy now and content. And he's insightful.
You get insight into who he is,
too. Yeah, he's insightful. I've got one more email if you want to hear it because it dovetails with what we're talking about.
Okay.
He said, listener said, ran a few numbers for the seeding round for every event this year, excluding the Freshwater Pro. And the average score for each position is, and the judging, actually, I'm confused. No, I'm confused by his sentence. But he said, first place, this is for the seeding round, so like the first round. First place average score is 12.36. Second place is 10.49. And third place is 8.43. So the average score for first place in the seeding round is only 12.36. So that means that you watch the entire seeding round and the average for the first place surfer is a pair of sixes. So he said you can compare that to any round apart from the elimination rounds, and it's heaps lower, which means that they're either surfing in crappy conditions or they have a lot to lose, so they hold back. Or the surfers ranked 20 to 32 are not in the same league as the top 20.
All of those things.
Exactly. He's like, we need to eliminate the eliminate the losers round one, have the field cut to 16,
yes,
or just have more stops at places like Fiji, you know, good quality
been
waves.
Saying that what you and I have been professing for years.
So the stats prove it out, though.
Yes.
If the elimination round, the first round, you get pairs of sixes to win, it's not worth watching.
Yeah. And the argument is, oh, they fly all the way around the world. They should be able to surf two heats. You know, it's like, no.
Nope. They shouldn't. They shouldn't be on tour if they're...
Yeah.
If that's...
Exactly. Yeah. I have some world title scenarios.
Yep.
Are you interested?
I am.
Okay. I first started this because I'm like, okay, who do I want to win the world title? I looked at the rankings and I'm like, I looked at them all and I'm like, who's the American? And it's Chloe. Chloe's number 5, right? So, understanding that's where I started, I could give you Chloe's title scenarios, or I could start with Idolo and just go down.
Give me Chloe.
So, Chloe can win the world title this year if he gets first place at Pipe, and Felipe, Jordy, Gabe, and Idolo get a ninth or worse. They all have to get ninth or worse.
So this is not going to happen.
We don't know that.
I'm gonna make predictions. You give me the scenarios, I'll make predictions. I would say the percentage of that happening is zero.
You got to give
on a statistical.
Yeah, like it's got to be 1%.
Nope.
No, it's statistically less than 1. No. Statistically. Seriously, like if you ran numbers, it would probably be like 3%.
I'd be less than
97%.
Gabriel's never not made the quarterfinals.
That's why it's 3%. I'm not saying it's 30%. I'm saying it's 3%.
And then if you factor that in with those other people not making what they need to make, it's impossible.
Felipe, 0%. Jordy, Gabe, and Idolo need to get a ninth or worse.
Yeah.
For Chloe to win. And Chloe has to win the whole thing.
So Felipe could get ninth or worse. Jordy... Could.
Definitely could.
Could.
Italo, less likely, and Gabriel, impossible.
Okay. So Chloe can also win the world title if he gets a second place at Pipe. And Jordy, Gabe, and Italo get 17th or worse. And if that's the case, Felipe gets 9th. Let's say Jordy, Gabe, and Italo get a 17th or worse. Chloe gets second place in the final. And Felipe gets a 9th place. Felipe and him tie. What do they do in a tiebreak? Who knows? That's a question for Dave.
I know. I forget what happens in the tiebreak, Sitch. But, like, look, reality, Chloe's not even going to make the final at Pipe, period.
Okay. I'm just giving you, if you're rooting for Chloe, if you're, like, a fan of the North American United States of America, and you want the North American United States of America surfer to win the world title, Chloe's your guy. And I'm just giving you those scenarios.
For all you racists out there, this is your
racist.
This is your scenario.
Are the Olympics racist?
Yes, the Olympics are wildly racist.
Oh, my God. It's not racist. It's pride in nation.
Nationalistic pride.
Nationalism.
To the point of...
rooting for the flag.
Berating the others and subjugating the others. This starts to sound awfully like...
You are a racist. That's crazy.
I am. What are you talking about? I'm saying I don't even see color. Oh, I just want the best surfer to win.
You said the C word.
What's the C word?
Color. Can't even believe you said that.
So,
so bad.
So,
why do you have to be like that?
Kaloe won't even make the final period.
All right. You want me to give you the ELO rundown, which is...
I want you to do each of them.
Okay. Well, Dave only sent me the ELO rundown. If ELO... Ferrari wins. We're going to call him Ferrari.
Italian Ferrari. We forgot about that.
I know. Italo's easier to say. If Italo wins Pipe, he clinches the world title. Done.
Period.
Period.
He's in first going into Pipe.
He is in first.
Yeah, okay.
If Italo gets second, Gabe Medina and Felipe Toledo will need a first place to take the world title from Italo. So if Gabe or Felipe win and Italo gets second, Italo does not get the world title. If Italo gets a third at Pipe, Gabriel needs to get a second. Felipe and Jordy would need a first.
Basically, Gabriel needs to do one heat better than Italo to clinch.
I think so.
Yeah.
If Italo gets fifth, Gabe needs a third, Felipe a second, Jordy a first.
Yeah.
If Italo gets ninth, Gabe needs a fifth, Felipe needs a third, Jordy needs a second, Chloe and Dino needs a first.
Yeah.
And if Italo gets 17th or worse, Gabriel and Felipe will need a ninth, Jordy in a fifth, and Chloe a second. So that's kind of what I... So basically, it's a pretty tight race between those sort of those top three, maybe throw Felipe in there too.
Felipe's not going to do well at Pipe. Like, the odds of him doing well are already slim, but him doing better than those guys are not... That's just not going to happen.
The wild card to me is Italo. He seems to be the wild card.
I don't see Gabe...
We know Gabe's going to do well.
Yeah, I don't see Gabe giving it up. I think
if Gabe doesn't do well, we'd be surprised.
And if he doesn't do at least one heat better than Italo, I'd be shocked. I think this is Gabe's to lose.
I agree. Totally agree with that. But it could be Gabe losing in the semis and Italo advancing, and we have our champion.
Yeah. But, so what is the strategy here for... the bottom three guys, like
poison Gabe. Yeah, just like get some E. coli and spread it around
the night
his food.
Before.
Yeah,
the night before.
Yeah, like really bad poisoning.
This is a good strategy.
Yeah.
Here's the downside of that strategy.
Yeah.
The event lasts over multiple days, so if they do, they poison him on night one.
No, no, you poison him like, you know, before finals day.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not against this. this is Italo's work to do, by the way.
Yeah, Italo.
Italo's the one who needs to really
right.
go Kerrigan style.
Get some like get Timmy Patterson to like shuttle the E. coli around. And who knows? Good.
I've never heard anybody put the emphasis on the coli. E. coli.
Yeah, yeah. How do you say it?
E. coli?
E. coli.
E. coli.
It sounds Italo like an Italian nephew. E. coli, fetch the cheese.
How excited are you about the women's race?
None.
Really?
None more or less.
You know where it takes place this year?
Sunset? Pipe.
Wow, that'd be amazing if it did.
Oliva?
Honolulu.
What? Doesn't it always take place there?
Yeah, that's why I was shocked that you didn't know.
I thought you were throwing me a curveball.
I was. It was disguised. It was a softball disguised as a curveball.
Oh, Lord.
So, Carissa Moore, Lakey Peterson, Caroline Marks. I'll give you the rundown, but who's your call out of those three? Do you know who those people are?
I do. And I like all three of them.
Okay.
I do. And I don't like necessarily, you know, I think that Carissa's the best surfer of them. Lakey's very close. She's incredible.
Yeah.
Carolyn Marks is has a little rough edge to her style that I'm not necessarily like if I had a daughter, I do have a daughter, and if I was to tell my daughter, hey, you should emulate this person of those three, it would be either Carissa or Lakey.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say, hey, study Carolyn Marks. Now, I know Carolyn's
that's
sort
what
of,
you almost love about her, though, is that raw.
Yeah, she's kind of raw. She's kind of like a young Adriana De Souza.
No.
Yeah, when Adriana first came on tour, it's kind of like square and raw and a little bit just...
Auk is the best comparison, I think.
She's not as smooth as Auk.
But she's got the same lead foot, full power, obviously.
I think Damien Hardman's a better example, actually. Like, you're like, I would never want my son to surf like Damien Hardman. Although he shreds.
See,
I think
you're underselling her. I think you're right about Auk and Damo, but I think you're underselling Caroline. I think Caroline is smoother than you've acknowledged.
Maybe. I just, in reference to these other two, she doesn't have as...
polish.
Yeah.
So, I am shocked that Carissa doesn't just win everything.
Me too.
She's that much better than everybody. It's crazy how good she is.
And if you came up to me and you go, God, it's amazing, Carissa's won the last 10 world titles, I'd be like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know.
I wouldn't blink. I'd be like, of course she did.
I know. It's crazy that she has half as many as Stephanie. I think of them as being like equally as accomplished.
I know.
So anyways.
But Carissa, I think, is more competitively... I don't know what the phrase I want to use. I just think Carissa's... Because Steph is pretty polished competitively. I don't want to say that Steph's not polished competitively, but Carissa, to me, if you were to put one of the girls on the men's tour, Carissa is the one that would go the furthest.
Yeah. I think she's got the most well-rounded...
I don't want to say she surfs like a guy, but she carves a mean... bitch and roundhouse cutback.
And she does airs and stuff. Like, she's got the most well-rounded, and she gets barreled at back door. Like, she's got the most well-rounded game, I'd say, out of any of the women.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think both her and Steph have a lot of holes in their competitive game still. The reason why she hasn't won as many as you and I think that she has is because she
never
stumbles competitively. Yeah. Like, why hasn't she already clinched if she's that much better? Here's the rundown at Honolulu. If Carissa finishes equal or higher to both Lakey and Caroline, she wins the title. If Lakey loses before the semifinals, Lakey cannot win the title. If Lakey makes the semifinals, she must finish at least one spot ahead of Carissa to win the title. And then Caroline's role is even harder. If Caroline loses before the final, she can't win. If she makes the final, she must finish at least two spots ahead of Carissa and at least one spot ahead of Lakey. And then if Caroline gets second, Carissa must lose in the semis, Lakey must lose in the semis, and Lakey and Caroline will have a surf-off for the title. So apparently that's what happens when there's
a tie.
There
could be a three-way surf-off.
Yeah.
According to what Dave sent me.
Okay.
Did
for the women?
That? Yeah, for the women.
Okay.
If Carissa gets a 5th, 9th, or 17th, Lakey needs a 3rd and Caroline a 2nd to force a three-way surf-off. So that would mean that, what's her name? Who's the young gal from Australia? Who's the girl from Australia that would be in the final then? Maybe Steph, but who's the other one?
I'm not sure.
Been on the tour forever.
Oh, Sally.
Yeah, Sally Fitzgibbons. I could see Sally winning this thing, or Steph winning it, and we get Carolyn second, Lakey third, Carissa with a 5th, and we have a three-way surf-off. That would be fun.
Would it?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe not.
All
right, forget it. We'll just watch football that day. Oh, my. By the way, as we go into this Hawaiian season, I just want to make a point.
Okay.
And it's something that I saw on Bobby Owens' Instagram. Do you even know who Bobby Owens is?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, for the listeners out there that don't, let me tell you who Bobby Owens is, according to Matt Warshaw's Encyclopedia of Surfing. Who, by the way, they're having a fun... He's having his November fundraiser, Matt Warshaw. So if you can find it in your heart to throw through a few shekels his way.
I wouldn't even find it in your heart. You should just subscribe for $3 a month. It's a no-brainer.
We'll do that, but this is like more like a fundraising thing. Like, yeah. I threw some shekels their way. But yeah, sign up.
How much is a shekel worth?
My shekels? Or I don't know. I don't really know. But congenial, freckle-faced Hawaiian pro surfer Bobby Owens from the North Shore of Oahu, world-ranked number 10 in 1982, but best known for his fast and fluid riding on the North Shore of Oahu. Bobby Owens was born in Italy, the son of a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army.
I didn't know that.
Moved with his family to Oahu in 1966, where he began surfing. 10 years later, he turned professional. Owens placed second in the 1977 prestigious Duke Classic at Sunset Beach. In 1980, he won the Pro Class Trials, also at Sunset. The Pro Class Trials used to be the very prestigious event which got you into the main events. And the Quicksilver Bells Beach Trials in Australia. He made the World Tour year-end top 16 four times, placing 12th in 77, 7th in 78, 12th in 81, and 10th in 82. An unlikely-looking surf hero at 5'8", 140 pounds, with chalk-white skin and wavy red hair, Owens was nonetheless among the most respected surfers at Sunset Beach in the late 70s and the 80s, and he was featured in more than a dozen surf movies. So Bobby stated something on his Instagram the other day, which I've said before, this will sound familiar, but which I think needs to be said again as we head into the Hawaiian season. And that is, I truly believe that an event at Sunset Beach needs to be judged with the full arena in the judging criteria. And right now what we basically have, the event at Sunset Beach has turned into an event at Inside Sunset. And it needs to be an event that covers the outside West Peak at Sunset. We want to see Bobby Owens style surfing, West Lane style surfing, Gary Kong Elkerton style surfing, Rabbit Bartholomew, Michael Ho, where their window, like rolling down the windshield, dropping into massive West Peak bowls, laying down 400 yard bottom turns, carving up high. Then it goes deep water, and they're cutting back to set up what they hope will be the inside section. And that type of surfing out there should be rewarded in this day and age. And that then would suggest that if you're going to surf in a heat out there and you just sit on the inside, the most you can get is a 5.
Even if you get a sick barrel.
Even if you get a sick barrel, the most you can get of, and that's the way you would have to do it from a judging standpoint to get them to start to inch out to the West Peak, yeah, and take off like a man, like the men used to take off out there. Like, that's what Sunset Beach is. It's not a contest at Inside Sunset.
Yeah.
It's a contest at Sunset Beach, all of its glory. The incredible mammoth West Peak, which rolls in for 400 yards feathering. You think it's going to break, and it doesn't break. It backs off until it hits you, and Al Chapman screams at you, "Go, you friggin' kook!" And you go, because you're at Sunset Beach. And this needs to be acknowledged by the WSL, by the judging staff, by the world. I hope everyone takes witness to what Bobby Owens said on his Instagram, mm-hmm, and likes it and agrees with him. And listens to what you and I are saying now, David, me more than you, and says, yeah, those guys on Spit are right.
I love to argue with you, and I cannot. I fully co-sign everything that you're saying.
Yes.
Enjoy this moment.
I'm going to just, right now, just soak, let's be in, quiet together.
Soak it in.
Special.
Okay. I'm going to lay wow, in some music
that
underneath this.
That is beautiful.
I mean, it's absolutely true. I mean, I actually forget. Almost, to be honest, I wonder as you say that if some, if we don't pay enough respect to Hawaii anymore, like some attention for pro surfing at large, there's less weight and focus on Hawaii than I think that there used to be. I feel like everything used to come to this pointy end of the stick, and at almost everything else in the season was like a sideshow just leading into Hawaii during the 3 months of the year, you know, or a couple of months of the year. It happens for longer than 3 months, but really the surf media's focus there is for 2 months. And now it's almost equalized where we're as equally excited about the, I don't know, Australian leg and Tahiti and the European leg and all these other things that are happening. And then
it doesn't really matter. Sunset's like an afterthought even. Pipe still matters, but sunset doesn't really have any weight in gravity anymore. Right?
Well, one of the 10,000 QSs is there, so it's very, very important, Sunset Beach.
From a point standpoint, it is.
And we can get it. See, I mentioned the Duke contest earlier in this conversation. The Duke contest used to be the most prestigious contest in Hawaii. And somehow or another, we lost it. And I'm saying, let's not lose Sunset Beach. Let's not lose it from our culture.
It feels like it is.
We need to regain it. And I think guys like Rocky Cannon, who did some of the commentary on the Vans event that was just there. I think it's incumbent upon the broadcasters to start to bring this up. And frankly, the judging staff needs to, like, people like Bobby Owens and Rabbit Bartholomew, people need to go, look, this is important. You know what I did today? I watched the 1983 Sun-Kissed World Cup at Sunset Beach.
On YouTube?
Yes. It was actually on Matt's site, the Encyclopedia of Surfing. I watched the two semifinals and the final, and it was awesome. And they were taking off at massive, big north swell sunset, straight howling offshores, late drops, Richard Schmidt, Michael Ho, Wes Lane, Buttons, Kanoa Downing.
Keone?
No, his brother, Kanoa.
Oh, really?
And just ripping. I think it was his brother. And just ripping and setting it at Michael Ho and just setting it up. Rod Kersop, remember that name? There's a name from the past. And setting it up, ripping the outside, getting into that fat section, cutting back, and here it comes. And there was that moment of, oh my God, here it comes. And Bruce Jenner, Caitlin, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Was talking with Fred Hemmings, and Fred's like, okay, they're setting up the inside section. Watch this. Well, you know, and sure enough, those guys are pulling into beastie inside barrels after doing all the killer stuff.
On a board, like, it's hard to find a board that's equipped for both of those things. The inside bowl and the outside peak.
And I blame Pipe because there's so much attention to Pipe and getting barreled. And Pipe is incredible. And the whole arena down there is insane. But don't turn Sunset Beach into a shitty backdoor event.
Yeah.
Because that's what Inside Sunset is. I mean, it's a mean, gross.
It's a wobbly.
It's a powerful. It'll break your ribs. But, I mean, it's mean. But if it's just going to turn into a tube riding contest at Inside Sunset, that is not Sunset Beach. That is not what surfing in Hawaii is about. That is not what the North Shore is about. And let's not marginalize it.
Right.
Let's make Sunset Beach what it's supposed to be and score them accordingly. If you're on the inside and only the inside, the most you can get is a 5.
I'm in.
Thank you.
Now, how do you feel about Haleiwa?
I love Haleiwa. That's probably the best. That's such a fun wave to surf.
No, but as a Triple Crown venue and an event.
I think Haleiwa, the problem with Haleiwa is, like many events, there's just so many guys in that thing.
Yeah.
That you have to run it, and so they run it in marginal conditions. But Haleiwa is a mean, tough wave to surf. I think it's really a challenging wave competitively. So when it's big, you know, north swell, or I guess west swell, it's a west swell, but when it's big, it's just a gnarly wave, you know, like,
yeah, there's highlight moments when it's good and big. I enjoy it in the contest, but I don't think it represents nearly as much interest as Sunset or Pipe.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like, there's moments during the 6 days or whatever when you're like, okay, it's proper, you know, like,
it's a fun little appetizer for the,
it's a gnarly wave. I don't think they do a good enough job of sort of, It's a spooky wave. It's a wave which you always seem to be struggling to stay in position.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Big wave world tour news.
Yeah,
I have some for you. Let's see. I'll just read straight from the press release. So, David, the official holding period for the WSL's big wave events opened a few days ago, November 1st, 2019. And it runs through March 31st, 2020. And this year's big wave season will feature the CBDMD Jaws Big Wave Championship and the Nazare Toe Surfing Challenge, two new events that will showcase the best of big wave surfing in the paddle and toe-in disciplines. The Nazare Toe Surfing Challenge, presented by Hogo Santa Casa will feature unique tow team expression session format. 10 two-surfer teams will participate. Within each team, the competitors will both drive the jet ski and surf, with each participant needing to ride at least two waves. There will be 4 one-hour heats with 5 teams per heat. Each team will participate in 2 heats with a priority system indicating which pair has their preferred choice of incoming waves at any moment. The event will be broadcast live and captured on video from multiple angles. At the conclusion of the competition, a nominating panel will examine the video evidence and select the biggest, best-ridden waves of the day, as with a group of big wave judges, and will review the nominated rides and places their votes in an assortment of categories. So the competitors and the judges decide together who they think wins in the Nazare Tow Surfing Challenge. And of course, Jaws, the window is open.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Interesting. It's kind of fits with a lot of things that we've been kind of advocating for, suggesting that they do. I guess what I'm really feeling is that I've been trying to make sense of the Big Wave World Tour now for a lot of years, and each year it shifts and adapts, and my interest is waning.
Yeah, you want some continuity.
I'm kind of, at this point, I'm like, all right, pull it off and show me, and then I'll decide whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. I'm almost...
If I told you that the Jaws is yellow lit and it's going to probably run on Saturday, would you be excited?
I would, for sure. Yeah.
So that's all that needs, right, to get your interest. The tow thing, you're like,
I'm
okay,
a lot less interested.
Boil it down and I'll show me a wipeout.
You know what I mean? Now that you're saying it, I'm a lot less interested. If you said the same scenario, there's a tow event on Saturday at Nazare, I'd be like, maybe I'll put it on.
Yeah.
But I will watch the highlights afterwards.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But the tow thing, I mean, dude, they go straight.
Yeah.
It's not that interesting.
I know.
It really isn't. And, like, to a certain degree, Nazare is a novelty wave to me.
Yeah.
And I know anybody who's ever surfed it is probably wants to rip my head off for saying that, because it is, you know,
I think from a consumer standpoint, it is a novelty wave. It's a wave where world records are going to be set and show me when they happen, and that's cool. But it's lost some of its eye candy luster because...
As a tow wave, it has.
Yeah, as a tow... Yeah. And I talked to JoJo Roper the other day, and he was like, it's a great paddle wave competition spot because it's so open ocean. There's so many gnarly peaks coming in all over. You're not all bunched up in sort of one takeoff area.
Right.
But they'll be towing this year.
Yeah. So
who's the world champion?
So as I think about it, I already can tell you what the highlight reel from the tow event at Nazare is going to look like. Yeah. And because I've already seen it a bunch of times, it's kind of like watching a wave from Surf Ranch. As soon as it pops up in my Instagram feed, I scroll right past because I already know what it looks like.
Yeah. There are two surfers, only two surfers, David, that are actually in both of these events. Should those two surfers just be the two that we consider the Big Wave World Champions? One of those two surfers? We've narrowed it down. They've narrowed it down for us. There's only two guys that are in both the Nazare event and the Jaws event.
So even if they got, like, last places, they might accumulate more points than somebody that got first place?
Well, yeah, between those two guys, we're going to have a world title.
Yeah. Who are the guys?
Twiggy? Who do you think?
Twiggy.
And?
Maybe Greg Long or Billy Kemper?
No. Kai Lenny and Grant Baker. Those are the two guys in the running for the Big Wave World title, according to Scott and David.
Yeah.
Yes?
According to Scott.
Another moment of agreement? Oh, my God.
If it was a paddle event, I'd give it to Twiggy.
Well, it's both. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I know. I'm just saying.
All right. Well, anyway, we're not interested. But what is interesting, right, is that this Mavericks thing is also happening, right? So, I don't know if we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Jeff Clark put out a press release basically saying, hey, we're running the Mavericks event. It's going to be a season-long event. We're going to get your clips. You're going to upload them to our site. We're all going to look at them. We're going to have specific categories. And, by the way, you have to make it to the channel to even be considered. There's none of this, like, what they call takeoff and inflate, go straight
inflate
or whatever. So that's interesting, too. So a season-long thing where they're going to be giving out awards for the Mavericks championship.
Right.
Thoughts on Mavericks and Jeff Clark being involved again.
I love it. I'm much more interested in that event, and I think that's a good kind of, I don't know, a visionary to allow make some of those bigger decisions. That is a correct decision that you have to make it to the channel. I think that's progress for the judging criteria. So I think good on you. And I think that event's much more compelling. That wave is much less... I don't know what that final wave will look like. In the highlight reel from Mavericks, I cannot predict what is going to be the winning wave. And each year out there, or each, yeah, I guess season, there are new boundaries that are broken and set for things, crazy things that we haven't seen before. So I'm excited for that one.
Good.
Yeah. What about you?
I am excited.
Feel the same way?
Yep. Yeah. I do. I do feel the same way.
It's an exciting wave. Scary wave. I don't know if you care about the Olympics at this point anymore, but there's been...
I do care about the Olympics.
Eight officially qualified surfers. You want a quick rundown?
Sure.
Joanne DeFay for France. Tatiana Weston-Webb for Brazil. Chloe Andino for USA. You want to cheer for that right now?
Yay!
Kanoa Igarashi for Japan. Jordy Smith for South Africa.
That sounded like a...
Sally Fitzgibbon for Australia.
Yay!
Stephanie Gilmore. Also Australia.
Princess Diana.
Jeremy Flores for France. Those are the eight. I feel like the Australian women's team has got a lot of potential so far.
How so?
That's a great team. Sally Fitz and Steph.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Rip Curl was sold.
Saw this.
This is interesting, right? On a couple of different levels. I don't know if you saw Mike. How do you say Mike C's last name? I always
butcher. Ciamarella?
Yeah. So Mike Ciamarella wrote a pretty cool article on Stab about this, in which he's suggesting that we should be thinking about what it means that corporate spreadsheet decision makers now own the entirety of the surf industry and therefore dictate our culture to us. Do you believe that to be the case? Do you believe that now that Rip Curl, sort of the last, Patagonia's privately held, but Rip Curl, the last sort
still
of hold.
Private.
Still, yeah. The last, now it's publicly held, right? So Billabong, oh, really?
I think the company that bought it is still a private company.
Oh, okay.
But it's not a surfer-owned company anymore.
Right. So Hurley's being sold to a company. Rip Curl's been sold. Mike's basic take was there's not like salt at the top anymore. There used to be Bob Hurley. There used to be Bob McKnight. There used to be Gordon Merchant at Billabong. There used to be Paul Nade. He's with Vistula, though. There's some salt there. Anyway, does this concern you at all? Mike seemed to say we should be concerned. And I don't give a shit. Like, none of that even affects me at all. And he even wrote, you're probably going to say that you don't care, that it doesn't affect you, but I'm here to tell you it will affect you.
No.
He sort of tried to make an argument that it did, but I'm kind of like, let the whole thing blow up. Who cares?
Well, it's not going to blow up. I don't think it's going to blow up, and I don't think... and I think that Mikey presents a reasonable concern, but I'm not concerned because the whole model is entirely different now. We used to care about that because those five companies did influence our surf experience. Those companies don't even sponsor CT events
anymore. That's what he said. He brought that up. He's like, so, none of them even...
That's the point. So who cares? They're now just selling clothes to all of the world.
Well, the interesting thing there, right, is that it's kind of like Facebook. It's like, okay, there's only one real social media platform, and it's the WS... Like, so our surfing platform now, culturally, is it just the WSL?
No, it isn't.
It's not. I agree. I'm just...
Yeah, it isn't. And all of the media...
It's you and me, and it's Surfline, and it's podcast, and it's everyone, and it's the Stab, and it's Chaz, and Derek, and everyone over there, and it's Warshaw, and it's...
It's all been democratized.
Yeah.
So anybody can create content. There's tons of good content out there. And then also, from a funding side, you as the viewer can pick your own path and fund those things and give Matt Warshaw $3 a month and keep him in business and... go buy Vistula product, who is investing in, you know, surfboard shapers and surf films and laminators even and all that sort of stuff. Like,
does surf clothes even matter anymore? I mean, I know it hasn't mattered to you and I for a long time, but do you think it'll get to a place where it's like nobody even wants to make clothes anymore because they realize no one's even buying? Like, it's just going to be Vistula's going to make wetsuits and trunks. Hurley's going to make wetsuits and trunks. O'Neill's going to make wetsuits and trunks. And really making, like,
outerwear. I'm not going to compete with North Face and Columbia and Patagonia.
I think it matters. People do. People do care. People want to wear a t-shirt from the brand that they have some sentimental attachment to.
A t-shirt's one thing. I'm talking about a full clothing line. Like,
yeah, I think the other stuff matters too. I mean, to a certain degree.
Do you think
degree.
In 10 years there won't be... What about the idea that in 10 years there won't be... In surf shops, there won't be as much clothing as you might think. It's just going to be board shorts, t-shirts,
maybe so.
Wetsuits. Because, look, you and I are going to buy our... We're going to buy our clothes online.
I don't know, dude. I think it goes both ways. I think the middle goes away. I think that, yes, there's mass-produced fast fashion on the one end of the spectrum that's available on the internet, and it gets to you tomorrow. It gets delivered tomorrow. And then on the other end, it is artisanal self-expression. And I think that that's true for the foods that you eat and purchase, for the teas that you drink, and for everything, and for clothing and everything else. You know, you get people who want a very curated style, and they're going to go buy the flannel from the company that they care about, or the pants that represent their look and lifestyle.
Let me ask you this. I go into a surf shop. Let's say I go into Surfline or Hanson's, or I mean Surfride or Hanson's, or wherever. San Diego. I go into a surf shop. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm going in because I need a new pair of shorts and some pants. Or a flannel would be a better thing. I need a flannel. I need a pullover and I need a pair of shorts. I personally am not like going in there to go buy like, say, Ruka or Salty Crew or Visla. But I am going to the surf shop to do my shopping. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to support my store. And that's what they carry. And that's cool. That's fine with me. And I'm going to pick from those. But I'm not necessarily brand loyal. I'm more loyal to the... concept Retail. Of the retailer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And whatever they put out, I trust that they've got some cool stuff, which they do.
Yeah.
And a wide variety. And I'm just going to grab the one that fits the best. And if it's Ruka, it might be a Ruka top, and it might be shorts from Visla or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, do you think that's more of the mindset, or do you think there truly is this brand loyalty? I sense that, and maybe because I've aged out of that, but I don't know if there's real brand loyalty.
Yeah.
It's more retail loyalty. Like, I go to buy my clothes at a surf shop because I'm a surfer. Whatever they put out, I'm going to grab the coolest one. But I'm not necessarily going, you know, like back in the day, I was like, I'm going to buy Billabong because Aki was, it's 1986 and Aki's on fire. You know,
you were a lot more subject to advertising at that point, or just who's cool in terms of pro surfers. You
yeah,
know?
My like, age,
that
it was
stuff
like the
doesn't
time
influence then. You anymore. I honestly, I can only speak for myself. I buy based on fit and
where the goodwill
material. Is. No, material. So it's like I have a pair of jeans whose I know exact size 32, and this cut and this style is what fits me best, and I prefer the feel of. And so I just buy that exact pant every time. You know, and I'll get a pair in black, I'll get blue jeans, and I'll get the cords.
I'm the same way. I have a sort of a set clothing thing that I get. Patagonia pants.
There you go. Shout out.
I love these pants. They're called Venga.
I've seen you wear them in mustard and
I've got them in every color.
I know. They're cool. I'm worried about my battery dying. Oh. So do you want to...
Oh, I've got a musty moment.
Me too.
My musty moment is... Kelly Slater and his girlfriend Kalani Miller at the Kelly Slater Surf Ranch riding together on one board, pulling into the tube. It's sheer joy on Kalani Miller's face as she pulls into the barrel.
Tandem
with,
surf
with her
barrel.
Loved one tandem in the tube. It's really cool. Put a smile on my face.
It's a great moment.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it for all of the ire that I've spewed at Surf Ranch in the last year or so, it warmed my heart. It warmed cool. the cockles of my heart.
Wow. Shackles, cockles, a lot going on.
Shackles of my heart?
Yes. By the Probably way, I've signed fair. Up to go to the Monkey Surf Resort.
Okay.
Yeah. Monkey Surf Resort, May, in May, I'm going.
May 2020.
I don't want to give the full date, but.
Okay.
Monkey Surf Resort. Shout out. I'm going to be giving some shout outs to my bros at the Monkey Surf Resort. Check it out.
Is it Red Monkey or is it just Monkey?
Monkey Surf okay. Resort.
My must-see moment... Russell Bierke's new edit. Did you see this?
No.
I forget the
name. I was watching the 1983 Suncast Sunset Beach World Cup. I'm way behind.
I forget the name of it. Russell Bierke's new edit. You know who that kid is, right?
Oh, yeah. From Australia. I love that guy. I'm a big fan.
It's insane, dude. There's one wave in particular that he gets at, maybe ship sterns. The greatest wave I've ever seen surfed. I watched it 10 times and I still couldn't wrap my head around
it. Did you do an aerial?
No, ship sterns, giant, you know,
five ledges.
And it's a massive wave too. It's like a very big wave for ship sterns.
Yeah.
And he free fall drops and connects at the bottom barely, like yeah. catches, like his rail just barely connects as the lip's falling right behind him. And he picks that line, like he just, there was no
critical,
room for error.
Critical.
No room for error.
Yeah.
On a triple overhead wave.
Five steps.
And air drops to the bottom, lands, and right the moment he lands, that's the line that he sticks with, and the barrel like breaks right past him.
Right.
So he barely sneaks in and just sits there getting this crazy barrel for the length of it and gets blown out. Every single moment in it is harrowing and could go gone.
How long is he at it?
15 minutes. Yeah. And Craig Anderson was in the water that day, and he said it's the best wave that he's ever seen surfed. Kelly posted about it on Instagram saying this is mind-blowing. It is next
this.
Level.
Okay.
It is completely
Let's
next
level. Let's
put
that level. On the Spit Podcast website.
Spitpodcast.com is the website. Cool. And then my Duke is Davey Van Zeel.
Oh, yes. Winning at sunset, right?
Yeah. Shout
South
out.
South African.
How about that? And I mean, Jack Robinson got that 10-point ride on inside sunset, which you think should have been a 5, but was unreal. Like Jack, like there were so many amazing kind of elements of that event, but Davey Van Zeel had enough wherewithal to win the entire event.
Yeah, so. That's cool. That's kind of cool. Dark horse.
By the way, we didn't mention it, but you know whose clothing I do wear?
Whose?
Need Essentials, baby.
Hell yeah, Need Essentials.
Need Essentials.
By the
baby.
Way, it's that time of year to get a new full suit. And so,
yeah,
people always ask me, where should I get a wetsuit? It's amazing how many people ask me.
I saw a guy in the parking lot the other day, and he noticed mine. He goes, dude, is that a Need Essentials wetsuit? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm waiting for him to like recognize me from the podcast because that's what my ego does.
Right.
And he never did.
Right.
I was waiting for him to be like, oh, yeah, I heard about this on a podcast or something like that. He never did. But he goes, oh, I got the same exact suit. And it was the back zip. That's what I had on. Yeah. I got the 3-2 back zip.
Yeah.
I think I prefer the front zip, to be honest. But I rolled the dice with the back zip. And I do like it. But
I need to get a new one for the season.
I just don't like that the string from the zipper gets in my way. Yeah. You know?
I tie a hat. I like the back, that string to tie a hat to.
Oh, okay.
I tie a hat.
The fact that you're even wearing a hat is hilarious to me.
You know what's hilarious to me?
Is that it's actually a visor.
The fact that you're going to be behind me in the tube as I'm driving down the line.
That is very likely because I've seen you burn lots of people.
I do not burn people.
I've seen you burn people.
That's a negative.
All right. Well, Scott, this was a wonderful show.
Is this your next guest? Yep. Just pulled up? Who is it?
NVS Fins. We're going to record some commercials together.
NVS Fins.
Naked Viking Surf Co.
Right. They look like Vikings.
You know those guys. Yeah. Let's say hi to them. All right, Scott, sign us off.
Okay, until next time. This has been a great show, David.
I'm thrilled with it.
Adios and aloha.